We're talking about indicators of authority tonight. Do we have any young people in here that drive? You drive, John Michael? Okay, so you're driving up 59 to go hunting. And you look at your speedometer. Why do you look at it? See how fast you're going. It's an indicator of your speed, correct? But an officer, highway patrolman, pulls you over. And when you went by him, he had a radar gun. And he says, young man, you were going 70. What's the radar gun? Another indicator of your speed. So your speedometer said, whatever, 60. This indicator said 70. Who's right? There's two indicators of speed. So in order to assess what speed you were going, you have to weigh both of those. And suppose there's a third officer with the radar gun, and he also measures your speed. It comes out the same as the other guy with the radar gun. Or if there was a police car following you, and he pulls over, and he says, my speedometer said you were doing 70. Now you've got four indicators of authority. So what's going to happen when you get to court? You say, you know what, Mr. John Michael, you need to go get your car checked out at the auto repair shop. Indicators. We're familiar with them. So because your indicator said 60 didn't mean you were going 60. When you talk about authority, it's very important. You'll see this on your lesson. We have indicators. There are commands. There are examples. There are also statements and implications. We'll talk some more about those when we talk about gathering the facts for ascertaining the divine will. Right now we're focusing on these two, commands and examples. They are indicators of what is authorized. When we say authorized, what do we mean? Authority given. But what does authority mean? The right to act. And so if we're looking for divine authority, now what does authority mean? Right to rule. And so that's what we do when we're studying God's Word. We prayed with Michael that we might better understand God's authority. That's why we have these classes. And so how do we understand God's authority? It's not by how we feel. You know, if John Michael told the police officer, I really felt in my heart I was doing 60. Reckon the officer would say, that's okay. No, he wouldn't. What if John Michael said, well, I had a vision that I was doing 60. No, you got an indicator. Your indicator's broke. My indicator said you were speeding. So indicators of authority. You don't determine the divine will by how you feel or a vision from heaven or what your neighbors told you. John Michael says, well, Danny was riding with me and he said I was doing 60. Sorry. And so here are two of the indicators, commands and examples. And we're going to see that a command in and of itself or example in and of itself is not authority. They are indicators of authority. The divine will or whether you have the right to act. Now, the second part of our class, we're going to deal with the difference in power and authority. If we have the power to do something, do we have the right or the authority to do it? We'll look at that a little bit later in our study. Let's start in this first part. I've got a paragraph here. And remember, the paragraph is there, and then the questions pertain to that paragraph. We must not confuse authority with the things, commands, statements, examples, and implications. There's the four facts. We'll talk more about those in the inductive method, and actually another lesson or two connected with that. Commands, statements, examples, and implications that we are provided to ascertain the divine will. These are indicators of authority. They point to whether or not we have the right to do something, or whether God has, in His right to rule, has given us the freedom to do that. To illustrate it, I've got Numbers chapter 22 and verse 20. Look at in your Bible at Numbers 22 and verse 20. God came to Balaam at night and said to him, "If the men have come to call you, rise up and go with them." What kind of statement is that, go with them? It's a command, isn't it? So this would indicate to Balaam that he had the right to go, correct? No. Because there are other indicators. Look back up in look down in verse 22. When he went, what happened? Well, he told him to go. Why would he be angry? Go back up to verse 12. What did God tell him? Do not go. So when God said, go with him, this was somewhat of a sarcastical, ironic statement. You know, if Matt comes up to me and he says, "Steve, you've got the most handsome man I ever seen," I know he's speaking in irony and somewhat sarcasm. And so, this is ironical where you say something and the opposite is meant. But you don't know it from the command by itself. It is an indicator. But there are other indicators. So what do you have to do to arrive at the divine will? Harmonize all the indicators. We'll talk about that in the inductive method. I want you to see clearly. Got a command, so we're authorized. That is not true. Now, let's look at Mark. It's not on your lesson, but look at Mark chapter 7, verse 9. So in this case, we looked at other commands and statements. And you could look at events, what happened when he went, or examples that would bear out the fact that this was not authority for him to go. Look at Mark chapter 7 and verse 9. Here's a statement by Jesus. "You nicely set aside the command of God in order to keep your tradition." So, some versions say you're experts at it. And some versions say you all too well. Boy, you do a good job at setting aside the commandments of God. Wouldn't that be Jesus' approval of setting aside the commandments of God if he says you do such a good job of it? Is that an indicator? You're afraid to answer?
Yes.
It's a statement. But you can't take that statement by yourself and say, oh, it's okay to ignore the commandment of God. Of course, you've got the entire Word of God that says that is not okay. So you have to take this in, again, a sarcastic way. You fellows do such a good job of ignoring the commandments of God. But you arrive at that conclusion by comparing other indicators. The fact that you have a statement saying, by Jesus, saying you do a good job of ignoring God's command does not give authority to ignore God's commands. Look at Judges chapter 2. Well, for sake of time, I've got two or three more like this, but let me go to Amos 4. Let's just skip some of these others for sake of time. and go to Amos chapter 4. Would God tell people to go and practice idolatry? Yes. I know what you meant. Look at Amos chapter 4, verse 4. Enter Bethel and trespass or transgress. In Gilgal, multiply transgression. Put that in your own words. What's God telling them to do?
Go and sin and do it again.
Go and sin and do it again. Do it a bunch. God's telling people to sin. That's what it says. No. Bring your sacrifices every morning, your tithes every 3 days. Offer a thank offering from that which is leavened and proclaim free will offerings. Make them known, for so you love to do. In other words, they ignored God's command. So God is sarcastically and ironically telling them to go multiply it. These are commands. But they do not authorize what is commanded, because there are other indicators to ascertain authority. And, of course, Linda knew exactly that idolatry is forbidden. That's really the answer for her question. And anybody that studies God in the Old Testament knows that He completely forbade the practice of idolatry. That's command. So we say, as a command, therefore it's authorized. Well, maybe, maybe not. Look at Hebrews 4:11. So if you have an example, then we can follow the example. If it's an example by God's people. Is that correct? No. No, it isn't. We hear brethren saying, well, there's no example. Well, here's an example. And then the question comes up, which is a really bad question. When is an example binding? Examples are not what's binding. Authority is what's binding. And examples are but indicators of authority. Look at Hebrews 4:11. Let us therefore be diligent to enter that rest, lest anyone fall through following the same example of disobedience. An example is a model to be followed or not to be followed. Which is it? You have to get other indicators to find out. So you'll note we have under 1C this statement. The existence of a specific command or an example in and of itself does not necessarily indicate a practice is authorized. I trust you see that from the examples we've given thus far. Okay, now look at Mark chapter 14. Mark chapter 14. Verse 14. Jesus was instructing his disciples, verse 13, go into the city. Say to the owner of the house, verse 14, the teacher says, where is my guest room in which I may eat the Passover with my disciples? He himself will show you a large upper room furnished and ready, and prepare for us there. Here's the question on your lesson. Did the instructions in the Old Testament about observing the Passover specifically mention a large upper guest room? Did they?
No.
Was that an authorized place to observe the Passover? Yes. So our first set of questions, number one, shows the existence of a specific command or example does not necessarily mean something's authorized. This particular section, number two, go down to C, 1C, 2C, the lack of a command or an example specifically mentioning a practice does not necessarily mean the practice is unauthorized. Today, brethren might say, where's the example to meet in an upper room for the taking of the Lord's Supper? And if there's no example, then it's not authorized. Brethren argue that way. That's not what makes it wrong, if it's wrong. And that's poor argumentation. Where's the example of having a restroom in a building? Where's the example of having a building the brethren paid for? Where's the example of having a blackboard? Where's the example of having a water fountain? We better be careful how we argue. It's easy to use that argument. There's no example when we want to defend a proposition. Instrumental music. Where's the example of using instrumental music? Well, there is none. Therefore, it's not authorized. That's not so. Instrumental music is not authorized. Let me make that clear. Christians in New Testament worship. But that's not the way we get there. That's just one of the indicators. I have here B, compare synagogues, specifically mentioned in the Old Testament. They are not. They arose between the two Testaments in that period of history, observing the Lord's Supper on the first floor, etc. Look at Romans 16:16. All right, number three is going to introduce another concept about these indicators and about authority. Romans 16:16. Yes, sir.
There are authorized actions, there are unauthorized actions, and then there's authority doesn't necessarily apply to that situation. Like
it's either authorized or unauthorized. But watch this one right here, number three. I think it's going to deal with your question, okay? Now, number one, we said the existence of a specific command or example in and of itself does not necessarily indicate a practice is authorized. Part number two said the lack of a command or example specifically mentioning a practice does not necessarily mean it's unauthorized. Now, what are we doing in number three? And I think it addresses your question. Look at B. Something may be authorized specifically by a command or example, but not required. It's authorized. That's the two categories. It's authorized or it's not authorized. But everything that's authorized is not required. Here's an example. So, Bill, did you kiss any of these guys when you came in? No? And here I thought Bill was a godly man, served as an elder. Look at Romans 16:16. What does it say? Greet one another with a holy kiss. Why do we dismiss that? Brethren have all kind of excuses. The fact is, that is a specific command. Now, is it required? That's the question. How are you going to find out?
Other indicators.
How do you find out if Michael was going 60? Other indicators. That's how you find out the will of God. That's how you find out truth. We're not studying the holy kiss tonight. But the other indicators point to the fact that the kiss was a cultural way of greeting. It wasn't the only way of greeting. Now, what Paul is doing here is not instituting a practice of kissing for greeting, but regulating a cultural practice. If you're going to kiss, let it be a holy kiss. Greet one another with a holy kiss. We don't have emphasis marks in our Bible, you know, big letters and bold. But that's where the emphasis lies. Greet one another with a holy kiss. All right, now, look at John 13:14. Here's another command. Actually, a command and an example involved here. Jesus tells his disciples, if I, then the Lord and teacher, washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. You ought to wash one another's feet. Then he said, I've given you an example that you should, that you also should do as I did to you. There are churches that have foot washing ceremonies. And they would say this church is not following the New Testament pattern because it doesn't have a foot washing religious ceremony. So, Jesus gave an example and he had a statement, you ought to do this. So, are we required to wash other people's feet? And if not, why not? Can we answer why not? Or do we just say, I don't know, but I'm dismissing that. Your feet are ugly and dirty and I'm not doing it. Is that the way we answer it? Or that's not the practice in churches of Christ? Is that the way we answer it? Or I've never heard that before? Is that the way we answer it? Can we give an answer? A reasonable, a logical answer? Why we tell people, you've got to obey the commands of the Bible and follow the examples, but here's one I don't practice. Why not? Ronnie, you had a comment.
In the verse you quoted, he says, as I did this to you, Jesus never washed my feet.
Okay. But wasn't he teaching them to do it?
Yes, he was.
He was. Not just his feet, other people's feet, right? Did they wash in the 30 years of early church history? Did they wash anybody's feet that you know of? Not a one that's recorded. In the 22 letters that you have written by apostles and prophets, is washing feet ever mentioned? Not once. So now you say, wait a minute, let me go back and look at what other indicators there may be about this practice. Was he teaching washing feet, or was he teaching something else that they needed to do? We're not studying John 13:14 tonight. Let's suppose I say, you know, such and such is so, and I say it for a fact. And then later Keith comes up with some evidence that I was wrong. And I say, you know what? I'm going to have to eat crow. Does that have anything to do with eating our crows? No. It's an idiomatic statement that says I've got to confess that I was wrong. When Jesus said, I want you to wash feet, was he talking about water and feet at all? That's another study, but I'm just suggesting that you think about that. But you've got to compare the other indicators. When we get to the lesson on inductive authority, we'll talk more about that. We've introduced the idea that authority resides with God, and then he delegates authority. But how do we find out what's authorized? Indicators. That's how. Not by how you feel, not by Church of Christ doctrine, not by culture, tradition, preachers. But by indicators, and these are the indicators. All right, so now look at number 4. 2 Timothy chapter 4. Verse 13. When you come, bring the cloak which I left at Troas with Carpus and the books, especially the parchments. What kind of statement is that? Command, isn't it? Look at verse 21. Make every effort to come before winter. Is that part of your New Testament? Has anybody in here ever obeyed either one of those commands? Now, Ronnie made a good point a while ago. This was not spoken to me. This was written to Timothy. Was Romans 16:16 written to me? No. Was any of the New Testament written to me? No. And yet you believe it applies to you. How'd you get there? You got there by other indicators. That's how you got there. And the same is true with these two statements. So anyway, so we make the point here, but we do what is specifically enjoined. And this is another illustration that commandments, statements, and examples are indicators of authority and must not, by themselves, be viewed as giving the right responsibility, a right or responsibility to act. They are facts to be gathered and harmonized to reach God's will. Okay. Look at Acts 11. Now you may think all of this is merely academic, has no practical application. Years ago, when brethren debated whether or not churches have the authority to send money to another church for the purpose of evangelism, that is, to preach the gospel. And some churches said, yes, that's okay. Other churches said, no, that's not okay. Other brethren said, no, that's not okay. And one of the arguments that was made by the brethren who said it was not okay said, there's no example of one church sending money to another church for evangelism. That's correct. All the examples of money being sent from one church to another church is for the purpose of benevolence, that is, to help that church meet the need of those people in that congregation. Conclusion, therefore, there's no authority for one church to send money to another church. In a debate, I say a debate, it was a discussion between preachers, and one of the preachers that believed it was okay said, all right, if that argument is valid, what about Acts 11 and 30? In Acts 11 and 30, it says they sent the funds for the relief of the brethren in Jerusalem, but they did it in charge of Barnabas and Saul to the elders. They sent it by two messengers. Where's the example of using the post office? There is none. Well, you've been arguing if there's no example, you have no authority. The example of transferring the money in this verse is by two messengers. How do you answer that? This was a discussion between knowledgeable men debating issues that have divided brethren. Can we feel comfortable with doing what we prayed with Michael? Trying to ascertain what the divine will is in this matter. We need to equip ourselves. Acts 20 and 7. Look at Acts 20 and 7. From the time I was a young boy, old enough to understand the Bible and arguments that were made, one of the arguments was made we ought to observe the Lord's Supper on the first day of the week. Why? Because of Acts 20 and 7, because that's the example. We've got to follow the example. This is a binding example. But there's another part to that example. It says in verse 8, they were in an upper room. How about that? Well, we're on the first floor. Why do we observe it on the first floor if we're going to insist we must follow this example? Am I saying the example has no bearing on authority? I've never said that. I've been arguing just the opposite. Yes, examples have a bearing. Yes, commands have a bearing. Yes, implications have a bearing. But you've got to gather all of those and harmonize them. I do believe this example has a bearing. I think it's very informative about when we observe the memorial. But if this was all I had, I would have difficulty arriving at the conclusion that we ought to observe the Lord's Supper, or must observe the Lord's Supper on the first day of the week. So, well, that's what churches of Christ have done for years. So what? How do we ascertain divine authority? Okay, this last part of our lesson has to do with the difference in authority and power. Understand, and we'll illustrate with the first verse we look at, that some of the versions, particularly the King James, will use the word power, where your version, if you're using the New American Standard or another later version, will say authority. Remember that words change meaning. Remember that words are vehicles upon which thoughts travel, and there may be more than one meaning to a word. So you have this word authority, and you have this word power. Okay, now sometimes the word authority includes the power to cause what you have commanded to be done. But not always. So sometimes one includes the other. But because you have the power to do something, may include the authority to do it, it may not. Let's illustrate. Look at 1 Corinthians 7 and 4. This is the New American Standard, talking about the marriage relationship. The wife does not have authority over her own body. If you're reading the King James Version, it'll say power over her own body. That is to withhold herself from her husband. Does she have the power? Yeah, she could run off. She could get a frying pan and knock him in the head. But power is the might or ability to do something. Now, talk about that. And we don't want to get into Greek words. We want to look at context. But there are two different words that are generally used with this distinction. And here's the word for authority. She doesn't have the right to. Remember, we talked about authority means the right to act. She doesn't have the liberty, she doesn't have the freedom to keep her body from her husband in the conjugal relationship. That's what the passage is talking about. I have a little quote here I'll read. It's not from a lexicon, it's just from a fellow that wrote a book on synonyms, Crabb's English Synonym. Pretty interesting old work many, many years ago. Here's what he said, quote, "Authority is confined to that species of power which is derived from some legitimate source. Power exists independently of all right. Authority is founded only on right. A king has often the power to be cruel, but he has never the authority to do so. Subjects sometimes have the power of overturning the government, but they in no case have the authority." I illustrated down here under B this way. If you have a gun and you know how to use it, do you have the power to rob a store? Do you have the authority to do so? No. Now, you may have the authority to start an oil company. But if you don't have the funds, do you have the power to do so? You can see there's a difference in the two. I have here on your lesson King Saul. He was the king. He had the power to save Agag and the animals. But did he have the right? What kind of authority did King Saul have? Delegated authority. Delegated authority to be used in accord with the will of the one who delegated. And then he didn't. He didn't have the right, so he was the top man in the kingdom. Jeroboam, He had the power to set idols in Bethel and Dan. Did he have the right to do it? Obviously, no. And these other illustrations that I gave. So might does not make right, neither in the home, the business world, or the church. So in the home. So here we've got these two young men with us tonight. As they get older, they'll be able to overpower Lisa. They'll be stronger than her. To ignore what she says. John Michael, Danny, same thing. But do they have the right to do so? That's the question. Do they have the authority to do so? No. A man might have the power to abuse his wife or to force her to do things. That doesn't mean he has the right to do so. Power and authority are different. We need to understand that. Same is true in business. You have the power to defraud or deceive or oppress, but you don't have the right to do so. And the same is true in the church. There are places where the church is small, there are no elders, and preachers might have the power to rule. That doesn't give them the right to rule. Elders might oversee money from 1,000 churches for preaching the gospel. They may have the power to do so, but they didn't give them the right to do so. Sponsoring elders, unknown to the scriptures. Majority rule in the church. There are churches when something important needs to be decided. They start gathering all the so-called members out of the bushes. Maybe they hadn't attended hardly at all. We're going to have a vote. We need your vote. If we get 51%, we get this passed. You may have the power to do that, but you don't have the right to do that. Then there's the other side of it. Churches want to do something, there's one objector. It's always objecting. And instead of the church going ahead with the consensus of the godly people, they'll bow to the objector. You know what you have? Not majority rule. You got objector rule. That's not right either. So, make a difference in those. Alright, we got about 5 minutes left. Let's look at our quiz. Commands, statements, examples, and implications. What's the correct answer? A. By this time, I hope we got the right answer. Serve as indicators as to whether a practice or belief is authorized or not. B is not correct. They're not always binding on Christians today. C is not correct. I don't know how many articles I've read on authority. The same discussion I was talking about this book. And preachers come up with some idea that it's only authorized if there's a background command. Where do you get that? I don't know. Maybe they're a lot smarter than me, but I haven't found it. I don't have to have a command. I have to have authority. That's one reason I put those on there. Of course, we talked about D. Must specifically mention a practice in order for it to be authorized. That's incorrect. Number two, any command or example in the New Testament. What's the correct answer? Or answers? More than one answer? C and D. May serve in indicating the divine will and should be considered by those who love God. And the ideas are not important betrays a woeful misunderstanding of divine authority. Number three, authority and power. What's the correct answer or answers? A, B, and C. Authority may sometimes be used to include the power to enforce that authority. The power to do something may not imply the authority to do so, and might does not make right. And so, authority and power can be distinguished. So, number D is not correct. All right, number four. Authority is a subject. A is the correct one, right? Just for a bunch of preachers to argue about. That's right, C. Requisite to the understanding necessary to be a Christian. I hope you see D is not correct. You will, I hope, before this course is over, that it has practical value. We're going to give some actual examples as we go through of practical value. And then B, how do you feel about B? I hope you don't say, man, this is such a mess. I don't understand what in the world he's talking about. If so, I failed. I hope we've been able to challenge your thinking, cause you to think. These are practice. This is not some kind of strange biblical reasoning. It's something you do every day, just like what I started the class with. You had an indicator, another indicator, another indicator, and another indicator. But you put them all together to arrive at the truth of the matter. Did John Michael have the right to be going the speed that he was going? That's the question. Okay, our time is up. Thank you for your attention and your comments tonight.